And happy Sunday, Jay Binkley with Quentin Morris, as we usually are every single Sunday. We've got our upsets of the week coming up at the end of the show, like we always do. There's no fantasy football this week. No fantasy football this week. Max got the day off, so you get an hour, extra hour of after hours, football, baseball talk, local college football. We're going to hit it all today. Good morning, Quentin.
Good morning. We got a bonus hour of after hours.
We do. And if people want to make money, end of the show. You're 3-0. I'm 2-1 at this point, so.
Which, you know, impressive overall.
Much better than baseball, buddy. Much
better than baseball, and Vern can attest to that.
Much better than baseball. Speaking of Vern, he'll join us at 9:30 to talk about those playoff-bound Kansas City Royals. 10 o'clock, we'll talk to our guy Josh Briscoe, Sports Illustrated Chiefs. Of course, he does stuff here at 96.5 The Fan for the Kansas City Chiefs. And at 11 o'clock, we will do Drew Nixon once again, who's all fired up for NASCAR, being like right where he lives. Like, he's been all over that. I saw a picture of him and Bubba Wallace yesterday on Twitter. I mean, that guy's all over it.
I mean, he's lived in Indy, you know, with the where the 500 is.
Down in Florida.
He lived down in Florida, yeah. So he's lived in some hot spots for NASCAR.
Yeah, good stuff to talk to him about local college football as well, as there's plenty to talk about regarding that. But playoff-bound Kansas City Royals, Quentin, you're the good guy to talk to at this point because you were producing the show when the Royals clinched things. Yeah, they kind of backed into it. Doesn't matter. They still clinched a playoff berth, but you were working that night. How excited were people?
It was awesome. You know, the post-game show lasted longer than the actual game, which was great. And, you know, playoff baseball is just something else. And you know what? Baseball games that matter, you know, late into the season is just something else for so long, for almost a decade. And you know what? For most of my life, for most of every Royals fan's lives, we've been watching playoff baseball. We've been watching games late in the season that don't matter. And we haven't seen playoff baseball.
How old are you, Quentin?
I'm 25.
Yeah. Things are much different for you.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's great to see games that matter and, you know, playoff baseball. I think the odds are right now, it seems like the Royals are probably going to go down to Houston to face the Astros. So we'll see how that works out for the Royals. But, you know, we had one person that called in that said that, you know, what's the point of having these playoff games if you are just going to, you know, get knocked out in the first round. And I couldn't disagree with that more.
You know, that was the thing back in 2014, which, by the way, the Tigers' last playoff appearance was 2014 as well. Of course, the Royals were 14 and 15 when they won it all. But the Royals sit one game behind Detroit. And the way things work out, if Detroit wins today and the Royals lose, same thing. Royals would, at that point, go to Houston. And the Tigers would go to Baltimore because they're the fourth seed. But if the Tigers lose today and the Royals win, the Royals have the tiebreaker over the Tigers, and they would go face the Baltimore Orioles. Everybody got that down?
Yeah, it's, you know, I would prefer to go to Baltimore, and I think there's a couple reasons for that. One, even though the Astros have been riddled with injuries throughout the year, they've sort of found themselves over the last month and a half or so. So, you know, there's a reason why they were able to win that division. The Astros are just a team that, you know, I just don't want to see. They've been the Chiefs of baseball, right? I mean, they have. They've been to the championship game 7 years in a row.
Seven straight years, yeah.
So they are a team that you just don't want to face, even though that they, quote unquote, barely made it. This is a team that finds a way to win, and they've been that team. So they're the Chiefs of baseball, except, you know, the Chiefs don't cheat. It's a team I just don't want to face. But, you know, you're going to face and you're going to go wherever they send you.
No, making the playoffs is making the playoffs. And this season's a success. Now, whether you define, I don't think you say if the Chiefs go to the playoffs, the season's a success, right? I mean, they got to win the Super Bowl at this point, don't they? They've gotten to that point, into that realm, that if they just go to the Super Bowl, you want to win it. Because I'll never forget that when Kelce, you know, after that game when they got beat in Tampa again in the Super Bowl, he's like, well, can we call this season a success? No, because they didn't win at all. And the Chiefs have gotten like the Patriots were just getting there. It didn't matter. You have to win it. So both of them are different. Royals, hey, they won 106 games last year. No team in the history of baseball has ever lost 106, turn around, and went to the playoffs the following year. Three teams have gone to the playoffs after losing 100 games the year before. So it's not an easy thing to do. It's impressive. And of course, keep this in mind, too. I mean, this is in the wild card era because it's a lot easier to do than when it was. But the 2017 Twins, the 2020 Marlins, but the Royals the first to lose 106 and then go, which makes the obvious choice, the manager of the year, is Matt Quatero.
I would hope so. And J.J. Piccolo deserves a lot of credit. You know, what's crazy is
100% he does.
He deserves, yeah. Ownership group deserves credit because think of all the moves that the Royals made, not only during the offseason, but during the season. You know, they didn't have to go out and get guys like Tommy Pham. You know, they didn't have to go out and make these trades during the middle of the year, right? Like, I think a lot of Royals fans would have been happy with, up to that point, the way the season got. And when Vinny went down, it would have been pretty easy to just throw your hands up in the air and be like, man, you know, big injury late. What are you going to do about it? You could have just thrown your hands up in the air and that could have been it, but you didn't. You know, what you did is you went out and you said, no, this team is good enough. Let's go make some moves to try and fix it around the edges, do what we can. And they did that. And they deserve a lot of credit for that, for not just being able to make the decision to do it, but then actually be able to go out and do it. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, it's been the whole thing. And you look at Seth Lugo coming in here and you look at the move for Cole Reagans last year with that trade. It's doing things like that, making the trades that make a difference for the team, going out and getting like a Tommy Pham to help your team, you know, through Vinny, because you lost a 97 RBI guy at that point. We'll talk to Vern about the timetable for Vinny Pasquantino, but it looks like, he's been hitting the ball. He's been hitting off the tee, and he's been facing live pitching, and he hit a home run yesterday as he's trying to make it back way early from that broken thumb.
Yeah, he was.
Way early, but early.
Yeah, he was talking to Bally Sports, you know, after the in the I almost said locker room, in the clubhouse, after the Royals had clinched, and he was very hesitant to give a timeline. But yeah, I mean, the fact that he was doing some simulated stuff with Will Smith, I believe, yesterday, he's been doing batting practice on the field the last couple of days. So it's good to see him back out there, and it's good to see him with the team. You know, he really is the heart and soul of that Royals team, and to still have him there in the clubhouse with the guys, even though he's not playing, I think says a lot about what the Royals think of him, but I think it also shows what he thinks of this team and this franchise.
Yeah, he's taken ownership of the team. I mean, you go back to early in the season, and says, this is a good team. I mean, he was saying, hey, this is a good team. This is not the same team as last year. This is a good team. Even J.J. Piccolo after the season says, this last year was a disappointment. We thought we were a better team. And clearly, I think they were. They just hadn't turned that corner, but they took ownership in. You know, Bobby Witt Jr. and Vinny Pasquantino, that's the new Haas. That's the new Moose, even in a better version with Bobby Witt Jr. because he's better than those guys. But Sal Perez and that generation and this generation, which makes him. This is why Sal Perez should be in the Hall of Fame. Because you went with one group that you came up with, like the Hosmers and that group, and then you went through the struggles, and you took a new group to the postseason, as did Sal Perez. But it took everything. It took making shrewd moves for the Kansas City Royals to get where they are. And, yeah, I know they haven't been great lately, and you get swept at home in six, and you're losing to Atlanta, which, by the way, you knew that was going to happen. So it's a good thing you built yourself a cushion, because Atlanta's in a fight.
Yeah,
with the Mets, and they got to play them on Monday as well because that hurricane canceled those games. But Atlanta is in a fight for the postseason. The Royals are ready to just drink and party and get ready for the postseason. Much different places.
Yeah, I don't care about the losses to Atlanta. I really don't, just because, you know, you already made your spot yesterday. You could see that the Royals were using pitchers to protect them in order to keep them rested so you could use your best pitchers on Tuesday and Wednesday. So, you know, the Royals lost 2-1 last night. I do not care. I could
and
not
Bobby
care
Bobby Witt Jr. didn't
yeah,
play.
Yeah, exactly.
Bobby and Atlanta Witt Jr. needs to win.
Exactly. So you're facing a team that needs to win. It's like when the Chiefs rest their starters in Week 18. It's like, yeah, of course you're going to see, you know, one team that comes out with more fight than the other, because the Royals don't need these wins. They really don't matter. You're in the playoffs.
Yeah, the Royals damn near won. It's kind of cool, too, because you know, Bobby Witt Jr. lining up now for that for the batting title,
which is pretty cool. You know, just to see Bobby,
first person since Brett, because Witt had led the league in hits but not batting average. Willie Wilson and Brett, the only two to do it.
Yeah, it's, you know, I hope that people give Bobby Witt Jr. the respect on the national stage, and I think I think it's happening more and more. I just think that, you know, my comparison for this is I think that baseball holds up home runs on this pedestal the same way that NFL writers and fans hold up sacks on this pedestal, where there is just so much more that players do, and there's more value you can get from your hitters than just home runs, and there's more value you can get from your defensive edges than sacks. Are they important? Yes. Are they big plays? Yes. But there's so much more you can do to impact a game, and sometimes they just don't show up on the stat sheet, and we've got so many box score watchers that, you know, sometimes we forget about the other things that these players do. And because of that, you know, they end up winning awards that other guys deserve.
Bobby Witt Jr. should get this. He's at 332. Vlad Guerrero's 324. I mean, that's a big makeup there if Vlad was going to do it. Here's the deal. If Bobby's like 0 for 3, I'd pull him. I wouldn't want to go 0 for 4, but pull him. Just keep him in there if he got it. But, you know, you want to win the batting title. Bobby Witt Jr., he deserves it. He deserves a plain and simple. Aaron Judge, by the way, hitting 322. So Bobby Witt Jr. should, in all practical purposes, win the batting title. But excited about the Royals. Does it feel like 14 or 15? I don't think so. Because in 14, I'll never forget, Vernon and I were in Chicago when they clinched at the end of the regular season. And there was this excitement, you know, people calling it and, you know, crying and tears of joy for the Kansas City Royals. Because it had been so long. It had been so long since making the postseason. Do you consider it a long time since 2015? I mean, that banner still flies. And I remember in 2014, people didn't really think it was making the playoffs when they had that wild card game, that they had to win that against Oakland. I consider any game that you play past regular season being in the postseason. And I sold my soul in 2015, Quentin, and I made it very simple. I said, I will take the banner, and I will take 10 years of mediocre baseball. And you know what?
So it's your fault.
I damn near got it. But you know what? I just want that banner. Like, I didn't want to go through the World Series again and lose it like they did to Madison Bumgarner in Game 7 of 2014. But I was like, you know what? I didn't know it would be that bad. But clearly, you know, when you go through the hard times, the best time, the good times make it that much better.
Well, and I think that, you know, when you look at the way this team is built, first of all, Bobby Witt Jr. is a better player than anybody that was on the 14 and 15 teams, and it's not even close. So I also think your core is as good or better, because I think Salvador Perez is a better player now than he was back then. I think Vinny Pasquantino is a better player than Eric Hosmer. So I think you have a better core now than you did in 14 and 15. I also have more trust in this front office to find pitching and developing pitching than I did in 14 and 15. I know, obviously, the HDH bullpen was something that will probably never be seen in baseball again because of that era.
That was elite. At that point, we didn't have an elite quarterback. That was elite.
It was, but because of 14 and 15, what the Royals did, they changed baseball forever. Relievers used to not get huge money, especially if you were middle relievers or if you were the sixth, seventh inning guys, right? You didn't get big money. Now those guys can get big money from the bigger market teams because they saw what the Royals did and what those elite bullpens can do. The Royals changed baseball forever. So obviously the bullpen is not even close, but the way that the Royals built this team in the offseason, I have more confidence in this front office to have more sustained success than just a flash in the pan that the Royals were.
Yeah, believe me, it was one of my favorite things to do when I used to go to the ballpark all the time. In 14 and 15 and stuff, I talked to the relievers on the other team. I was like, how much are the Royals, you know, helping you guys? And they were like, yeah, we love it. You know, they love the Royals making more money. And keep in mind, the Royals play a different ball game than everybody else, because the TV revenue is less. I mean, the Royals are the only small market team to win in the cable television era, a World Series. So what they have to do, they have to be right, and they have to make shrewd moves. And you got to take a Chapman and get a Cole Reagans from it. You have to be able to do things like that. It's not like the NFL where everybody's got the same pot, and you just got to be smarter than everybody else. You got to be smarter and cheaper than everybody else to continue going on. But I'm very excited about the Royals going to be in the postseason. It's a great time to be a Kansas City fan. It just is. Now, it's not a great time to be a Kansas football fan and a Royals fan, a Chiefs fan because of that. But K-State fan, Missouri fans, Royals fans, Chiefs fans, you're having a hell of a fall, man. And it could have been much different had they not made it. But they did. So the Royals in the postseason, Chiefs are going for a three-peat. two of the three local college football teams are looking really good at this point, but life is good in Kansas City for sports fans right now.
It really is, and you have to enjoy it while it lasts because the stars have lined up for Kansas City, especially if you are a fan of the correct Kansas team.
913-586-7965 is the phone number. 913-586-7965 is the Jay Southland Tow Service text line as well. We'll talk to Josh Vernier about those Kansas City Royals at 930. But coming up next, the Chiefs and the Chargers. Chargers pretty banged up team. Explain next. And welcome back, Jay Binkley, Quentin Morris producing the operation. That's right, the Chargers, the fake fans. L.A., football in L.A., sorry, man, they got too much to do. Do they even care? The Rams have won a Super Bowl recently, but last week it was filled with 49ers fans in SoFi Stadium. It was like all red, and it was a Rams home game. You know, the Chiefs, it's going to be probably a 50-50 split of Chiefs fans and Chargers fans today. And the Chargers banged up. Justin Herbert looks like he's going to go. I think it's a huge mistake for the Chargers. Jim Harbaugh obviously really wants to win against the Chiefs. Chiefs 8-2 in the last 10 against the Chargers, 17-3 in the last 20 against the Chargers. But both tackles look to be out. Rashawn Slater for sure is out, their left tackle. And looks like Joe Walton's knee is going to be out. So you have Justin Herbert hobbling around, and you got no starting tackles with him. That is a recipe for disaster. And they have a bye week next week, so you could rest him, but they don't want to because they know the importance of playing the Kansas City Chiefs.
Let me ask you this. With the limited mobility, presumably, of Justin Herbert and the starting tackles for the Chargers being out, what are your expectations for the edge rushers for this game? Are you expecting more production? Are you especially from, you know, maybe FAU, do they try and get him more involved, get him in more of a rhythm? Just what are your expectations for the defensive line?
I love it. I love the matchups with these edges. Mike Dana won't be playing in this game. I mean, Mike Dana would have been a force in this game. But yeah, FAU. Cam Thomas, who they made a move for Arizona. Remember, he comes over here. He's not been active. That's a guy I really liked through the draft process when he was at San Diego State. The guy can get after the quarterback and play three technique and play outside. He could do so many things. Expecting big things from him today because he'll probably be active today since Mike Dana's not. But, yeah, I expect this defensive line to be very active. You got to be a little cautionary because one thing the Chargers have been able to do is run the ball really well. They haven't thrown the ball much, you know, to much success this year. Justin Herbert obviously has a great arm. But they lack at wide receivers. Quentin Johnson's having a better year than he was last year.
It's hard to have a worse year.
Yeah. Ladd McConkey. I mean, I think he's going to be fine, but they miss Williams and they miss Keenan Allen. The team misses, but they've been running because Jim Harbaugh runs the football, and J.K. Dobbins has been a great pickup for $1.6 million for 1 year. That guy's off to a hell of a year. But the Chargers are not throwing the ball well.
Yeah, we knew this coming in right to the year. We knew that the Harbaugh team, just based off of his past success and the way that he manages football teams, that they were going to be a heavy run team. And then if you didn't know Harbaugh's pass, you just looked on the outside receivers, you just hit on it. Who the hell were they going to throw the ball to begin with? Because they have nobody out there. Quentin Johnston was a huge disappointment last year. I mean, the guy just couldn't catch anything. He couldn't get open. I still can't believe that people in Kansas City wanted the Chiefs to draft him. And now you're in a situation to where the only thing you can do is run the ball. I mean, that's why they went out and spent money in free agency. Not a lot of money, but they spent some money in free agency.
The Chargers ranked 31st out of 32 teams passing the football. They average, with Justin Herbert, they average just 125 yards passing a game. Now, running the ball has been much different for the Chargers, and I fully expect them to run a lot today. Because if Herbert is playing, to turn around and hand the football off is much better because they're one. Seventh in the NFL in rushing the football this year. So turn around, hand the football off, try to control the clock a little bit. Because Jim Harbaugh, hey, he's a great coach. I think he's the second best coach in this division. I know he doesn't have a Super Bowl title. Sean Payton does. But I think Harbaugh is better than him right now. Harbaugh, of course, won a national championship at the collegiate level. Brandon Staley was a joke. Their previous coach was a joke, and he basically held that team back. But Harbaugh won't. Something else I was going to get to before we get to Vern. Check this out, Quentin. 18.6 million average viewers, TV and digital per game. The highest average through 3 weeks since 2015, up 10% from last year. 18 of the top 20 shows on TV since the start of the 2024 season have been NFL games. Check this out. Number one, Chiefs Baltimore, 28 million viewers. Number two, Cincinnati versus Kansas City, 27.9 million viewers. Number three, Baltimore versus Dallas. Number four, Kansas City versus Atlanta. Number five, Dallas versus Cleveland. Three of the top five are Kansas City Chiefs.
Chiefs remember, are America's team.
They are. Remember the first week that the NFL fined the Chiefs $100,000? Like the NFL, which is funny, the NFL fines the Chiefs. What the NFL needs to be doing is giving a secret envelope to the Kansas City Chiefs. They were the first game ever on Amazon. They were the first game ever on Peacock. The NFL is using them. Stop fining them. Because this team is making you money. Because people are watching the Kansas City Chiefs, but the NFL will still be the NFL, but the Kansas City Chiefs, clearly the team everybody in America wants to watch.
I mean, it's why they keep getting more and more primetime games. Remember, they changed the rule either last year or the year before that to where not every team has to be in primetime anymore, yeah. And then Kansas City keeps getting more and more primetime games. It's why last year that they were the team that had the least rest against their opponents heading into December and January.
It was six straight weeks. It's never happened before,
yeah,
according to Warren Sharp.
That's why, because you are the team that people want to watch, whether they want to hate watch you or whether they want to watch you because you're just a fun team to watch. You know, it's because you, Patrick Mahomes, has brought this franchise to the top of the NFL level.
Yeah, the Chiefs are right where the NFL wants them, because half the people are watching it to see them lose, and then half are watching it to see them win. They're kind of stuck right there in the middle with that, and it's fun to see. It's fun to see because, of course, the Chiefs are the villains now. You know, people all across the country want to see the Chiefs lose. They hate the Chiefs. But it's more fun. It's more fun that they hate you so bad. And we'll get into more of that later. But we'll talk about the Kansas City Royals heading to the postseason with Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, next. Royals are postseason bound. Can't wait for that. This is a fun fall in Kansas City. There's no question about that. Welcome back, Jay Binkley. Quentin Morris producing the operation and joining us now through a magical hotline. The host of Royals Pre and Post, the best in the business, Josh Vernier. What's up, Vern?
What's happening, Bank? How you feeling, buddy?
Hey, we're feeling good, man. It's the fall of, let me put it this way. Things in the city weren't like this when you got here. Or close to it.
No. 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 When I arrived here, 12 years ago, the city could have never envisioned, you know, forget the Royals. The city could have never envisioned Patrick Mahomes, right? I mean, we can just stop right there. The idea that Andy Reid would be the Chiefs head coach, that you'd have the greatest quarterback of all time, the greatest tight end of all time. And on the other side of the parking lot, you would have a 24-year-old shortstop that put together what could be classified as the greatest season ever put forth by a shortstop, certainly the greatest season ever put forth in a Royals uniform. Yeah, it's not only that, not only do you have those players, but the mindset, Bank, you know this, the mindset of the city has changed, right? I mean, Royals fans are heading into this postseason with the expectation that they can beat the Houston Astros in the first round. I mean, you go back to 2014 and that wild card game. I remember being up in the press box and listening to the conversations of, oh, well, did they even really make the playoffs?
Yeah,
because this game is in September. If they don't make it to October, was it all really worth it? I mean, everything in this city has changed. And we could even talk about ownership, right? The way that Clark Hunt has taken a stranglehold on that organization after, you know, after the Romeo Crennel disaster, he said, all right, I'm not letting anybody else handle this. Give me Andy Reid. Give me football people at the top. And then on the flip side, man, I've been quoting you for the past few weeks because John Sherman is what you've always wanted, what you've always talked about, a fan with money. Boy, did he ever back up the Brinks truck this offseason, and really throughout the course of this six-month campaign, a willingness to bring on contracts like Paul DeJong, Michael Lorenzen, so on and so forth. Everything top to bottom, from the fans to the billionaire owners. Everything in this town has changed in the 12 years.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels between, you know, I mean, obviously baseball's, you know, different than football as far as the money is concerned. But you look at building both teams. I mean, J.J. Piccolo doing the shrewd moves that he did, doing the trades that he's done. Brett Veach has done those trades. You build the team for success, and there's a lot of that. And then, of course, the commitment that John Sherman made. This is
fun. Let me ask you this. Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Because, you know, as you mentioned, the two general managers, the rings that Brett Veach has obviously sets him apart. But I look at J.J. and not only convincing Bobby to sign long-term, but you mentioned it a moment ago, the Cole Reagans acquisition, the Seth Lugo signing this year at the deadline. To me, J.J. won this year's deadline. He won last offseason. He won last year's trade deadline. I'm curious, outside of the drafting of Patrick Mahomes, which is, sure, on Brett Veach's resume, but he has to share that with John Dorsey. We praise J.J. Piccolo for finding those diamonds in the rough in Reagans and Lugo and guys that were overlooked. Who would you classify as those shrewd moves made by Brett Veach where, no one thought that that player would be as impactful as he ultimately turned out to be? Like, who's their Seth Lugo? Who's their Cole Reagans?
I think Harrison Butker. Obviously, the best kicker in the National Football League, taking him from the Panthers practice squad, put him on the Chiefs. Sure. He flipped Parker Anger, who's out of the league for Charvarius Ward, who came in here, was a starting corner for a while before he got the big money in San Francisco. He needed a left tackle, so he went to a rival and got one. And those draft day deals where he's hopped ahead of the Buffalo Bills for Trent McDuffie, the fact he got, you know, well, Dorsey was here when they got Mahomes, but still in trading back and forth with the Buffalo Bills this year. But the fact that Orlando Brown came here, and I know he wasn't the best in the world, but they did win a title with him and they didn't have a left tackle. Moves like that, I think definitely are kind of under the radar. And I'll never forget after the Packers Super Bowl or the Eagles Super Bowl win the Chiefs had, he held up the Lombardi at the parade and he said, "This is what a rebuild looks like." And I'll never forget that quote because he's holding the Lombardi saying, "This is what a rebuild looks like," because they had five rookie defensive backs in that Super Bowl. Your leading rusher was a seventh round pick. The way the NFL is, all the money is the same. You just have to be smarter. You have to be smarter, and you have to reload your team and rebuild it, and they did. And it kind of reminds me of J.J. Listen, the Royals spent money with John Sherman, but clearly it's not in the same ballpark as what some of the other teams are spending. The Royals just have to be smarter than everybody else, and they're proven to be that. The Chiefs have to be smarter than everybody else. And both these teams, with Brett Veach and J.J. Piccolo, they just seem smarter right now than the rest of the league.
Yeah, no, you make a great point. And yeah, sure, Brett Veach needs to be smarter because I'm guessing the Mahomes contract, right? When you have a quarterback getting that type of money, you know, Seattle did it for a while. The Packers had a spot there where they did it well. But man, is there anybody, I guess the Patriots maybe, I don't, is there anyone that has balanced a big-time quarterback contract as well as Brett Veach has?
Well, you know, the whole talk was he was thinking about that contract even before Mahomes had started.
Yeah.
You know, he's behind Alex Smith, and he was like, this guy's going to win MVP. This guy's going to win Super Bowls. And they figured out a way to keep Mahomes. The Royals figured out a way to pay Bobby Witt Jr.
Right.
They're superstars, what their franchise is all about. So in a way, both teams very similar. They are able to keep their superstar. They're both going to be in the postseason, and they've both developed and made shrewd moves to help their team. There's a lot of similarities.
Yeah, especially with what matters most. You've mentioned six or seven different defensive backs, right? If you can hit on safeties and cornerbacks late in the draft, man, quarterback is obviously the most important position, But you need defensive backs, sure. So the way that Brett Veach has gone about that, to me, is similar to what this Royals organization has done in the pitching department. Because obviously you need a superstar in Bobby Witt Jr., check. Obviously you need a great quarterback, and they have that in Patrick Mahomes. But if you're going to stop other great quarterbacks, you need a great secondary. If you're going to stop other great pitchers, other great hitters, you need a stable of quality arms, and J.J. Piccolo has certainly procured that, as Brett Veach has done the same thing. The only the next step of this conversation between the Chiefs and the Royals, and when you look at the front offices, as you might have the best GM in the NFL, and you know, J.J. Piccolo and A.J. Preller are battling it out for Executive of the Year right now in all of Major League Baseball. The only difference, I would say, Bink, is the Chiefs, because of Andy Reid's genius and the genius of Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, I still believe that the, and I'm not saying you disagree, but I still believe the Chiefs can overcome a mistake, a contractual mistake, more so than the Royals can.
Yeah.
This is something that you and I have been talking about for years. You know, the difference between the Yankees and the Royals isn't the farm system. It's not drafting and developing. It's when the Yankees sign a loser to a long-term contract, they can eat that contract or deal with that contract a lot better than the Royals can, as we've seen with fill-in-the-blank bad Royals contract. We haven't seen JJ sign that bad contract, but when and if he does, I think that hurts the Royals a lot more than it hurts the Chiefs, just because Mahomes can overcome having lesser than at a specific position. Royals just don't have that luxury.
It's throwing cash as a Band-Aid. You know, like Pablo Sandoval when his belt was popping off. You know, they could pay him $40 million to go away. Or what, the Angels paid like $78 million for Josh Hamilton? Hell, that $12 million the Royals owe to Omar Infante hurt the organization.
Yeah, I mean, they're paying Hunter Dozier, I think, $7 million this season, and I'm sure John Sherman's not happy about it.
So what do you think makes this team different than you and I sitting in Chicago in 2014 when they clinched the division and they made the postseason for the first time in a lot of people's lifetime, the first time since 1985 for me? But what do you think makes this team different now than that team in 14?
I think this team... And I can go back to my dispatches from spring training. One of the first things that hit me about this team, now I'm not saying I predicted them to win 85 or 86 games. No, not at all. But I was impressed right away in spring training in the clarity of the goals being stated by this team. Whether it's Bobby Witt Jr. or Cole Reagans or one of the vets or one of the guys that hadn't yet debuted in the big leagues. The way in which they all spoke about the goal being winning. It wasn't individual goals. They talked about a willingness to sacrifice their own personal statistics. The only thing that anyone wanted to talk about was winning. And it's not your usual spring training, I'm in the best shape of my life cliche, hey, we want to win. No, I'm looking deep into these guys' eyes. They meant it. They were disgusted with that 106 loss campaign of a year ago, and they showed up with the right mindset. The difference between the 2014 Royals and the 2024 Royals is honestly belief. That belief that I'm talking about dating back to spring training. Now, in 2014, when I showed up to that spring training, they, you know, Haas and Moose, they thought they were good, right? They just finished above 500. They knew they had talent, but they weren't sure if they had what it takes to win a lot in October, to succeed in the postseason. And that's when you go back to the Raul Labana speech in August, where it's a cagey vet uplifting the boys, letting them know just how well-respected they are around the league and how they have the goods to do what they ultimately did and make a run to Game 7. This Royals team has received that message since spring training, right? I talk about the clarity of their message, their desire to win, their willingness to sacrifice. All of that was supported by encouragement and advice And, again, a perspective from an outsider. Will Smith and Chris Stratton stepped in here and told those relievers, man, you got nasty stuff. Bobby Witt Jr., MJ Melendez, we didn't enjoy facing you guys. You know, while I'm, which, by the way, Will Smith, still, again, an opportunity to win a fourth straight World Series title.
That's unbelievable.
With a fourth different franchise. I thought that was a joke when we were talking about it in spring training. But
that's some Charles Haley stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So Smith and Stratton are giving the Raul Ibanez speech to the bullpen all year. Adam Frazier and Hunter Dozier are doing it to the hitters. Michael Watkins, Seth Lugo have been doing it to the starters dating back to spring training. So to me, the big difference, you know, outside of HDH, right? This team doesn't have HDH, but that team didn't have a Bobby Witt Jr. or a future Hall of Famer in Salvador Perez. I know they had Salvi, but he was 10 years younger. And it's pretty clear that Salvi is just such a better player today than he was back in 2014. But to me, the main difference is this 2024 ball club didn't need that Raul Ibanez speech midway through the campaign because they were receiving that message dating back to February.
I've enjoyed this conversation, Vern. Final question for you, though. Vinny Pasquantino, when do you he looks ahead of schedule, man. I mean, is he going to play in the wild card?
Ah, boy. I'm listening to J.J. Piccolo last night, and he acknowledges the surprise that he himself has that he's even entertaining the possibility of Vinny Pasquantino returning on Tuesday. That's a direct quote from J.J. Piccolo on television last night. I can't believe we're talking about Vinny possibly being in the lineup on Tuesday. He took Steven Cruz deep yesterday down in Atlanta on the field, some live batting practice. Man, if you can get Vinny in that lineup, it certainly will change my confidence for this team going into the postseason because now, with the bullpen picking it up of late, this offense that has been the worst in baseball throughout September, you get that guy back, you get those 100, almost 100 RBI thrown back in your lineup. Now this offense is at least middle of the road. Now you don't have a clear weak link. And now Houston, likely, maybe Baltimore. I wouldn't pick against the Royals. I'll tell you that. When you're throwing Reagans and Lugo in Game 1 and Game 2, Bobby, Salvi, and Vinny, you know, one swing of the bat, you could find yourself up 1-0 on the road in the first inning, and all those fans start to pucker up. Oh, boy, if you can get Vinny back in there on Tuesday, sky's the limit.
Hey, bring on Houston, man. You know, I know the Royals didn't look good this last road trip to Houston, but they've played this team very competitively the last couple of years, so bring them on, Vern. Bring them on.
Why not?
I'm excited, man. I mean, how can you not be excited being a Kansas City sports fan? What the Royals are doing in their front office, and you see sustained success. That's the one thing. Like, when you look at the Chiefs, the Royals, they're not going anywhere. This isn't going to be one of these teams that just wins and they go away. Like, we've seen so many teams that win a Super Bowl and they go away. Sustained success with a plan in place going forward. Like Alabama football did. You know, you want to be good. You want to give yourself a chance to win each and every year, and you got to feel confident in both these teams going forward in future years.
And I know it's been a grind for the Jayhawks, but I still think you're building a program there in Manhattan, with Mizzou. Great time to be in the city. I don't care who you're rooting for collegiately. If you're pulling for the Chiefs and the Royals and Sporting and the rest, man, there's just a great time to be alive, no doubt.
How about your Michigan Wolverines? They need to throw the ball better, but they're running it really well now.
I don't see that happening this year.
Hey, they're winning.
Grabbed the jug yesterday, man.
That's right. That's right. Good stuff, Vern. We'll listen later on today. What time are you on today?
Be on at 1 o'clock over on the Fan AM 610.
Okay, at 1 o'clock because everybody's starting at 2 because it's the final day.
2:20 first pitch. Yes,
so
sir.
It does matter. Vern will fill you in on what's going on. Of course, on the post-game show, you'll find out exactly where the Royals will be on Tuesday night. But Josh Vern, you're the best in the business, our Royals insider. Thanks, Vern.
Thank you.
There you go. I love talking to Vern, man. How can you not get excited about that? Coming up next, though, Patrick Mullen has a chance to do something no one else has done next. Hey, welcome back to 96.5 The Fan. That's right, home of the Kansas City Chiefs, home of the Kansas City Royals, home of the Kansas State Wildcats. NFL record book, most wins in first 100 games. Patrick Mahomes, 77. Tom Brady, 76. That's through just 99 games. He has a chance today to make it 78 wins through his first 100 games. I mean, it's incredible, you know, what Mahomes is doing. The fact that he's got that, yet the haters will still be out there. According to 33rd team, here you go. Through those first 99 games, Mahomes is thrown for 29,083 yards. Brady, 22,451. Total touchdowns, interceptions. Mahomes, 236 touchdowns to 160 of Brady. Only 67 picks to 79 of Tom Brady. The passer rating, Mahomes, 103.1. Tom Brady, 89.9. MVPs, Mahomes 2, Brady none. Super Bowl wins, Mahomes 3, Brady 3 through the first 100 games. So, yeah, Mahomes is definitely on that path for greatness for the Kansas City Chiefs. Of course, the 7 Super Bowls, but again, there's been some... Patriots have had some luck along the way to get that 7, no question about it, like the catch rule.
There's still plenty of time.
The tuck rule, excuse me. Plenty of time. He didn't hit his prime. Again, I bring it up all the time. Like, Steve Young built a Hall of Fame career just for what he did in his 30s.
Should we remove one of those Super Bowl wins because you lost to Eli Manning twice?
Sure.
Does that deduct a Super Bowl win?
That's got to be tough for Belichick when he's on that Manning cast with Eli because he beat him twice. That's why Eli's in the Hall of Fame. Not only did you win Super Bowls, you beat the Patriots twice.
I think the Hall of Fame... The narrative is, can you tell the NFL story without this person? And if you can't, then you need to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So, because it's different than other Hall of Fames. So I think that's sort of the narrative behind the NFL Hall of Fame. And so because of that, Eli Manning probably should be in the Hall of Fame, even though I'm not super happy, you know, about that, just because he wasn't that good of a quarterback. But because of those two runs in the playoffs, I think that he becomes an important figure in the NFL.
By the way, per Ann Rodgers, who covers the Royals for MLB.com, your rotation for the wild card series, game 1, Cole Reagans, game 2, Seth Lugo, game 3, if necessary, Michael Walk. So that's your wild card rotation. That's expected. That's good. I mean, that gives you a chance to win the damn series. Just need the bats to come alive. I need Vinny to play, man. That'd be awesome. Imagine Vinny out there.
I mean, if you look at the Royals, you know, pitching staff throughout the entire year, the starting pitching, they're second and third in so many different categories. And then the one that really sticks out to you is not only are they second in ERA and third in strikeouts, but they're the first in innings pitched. So they have all of these top records, top stats in all of baseball. But they've pitched more than a lot of these other teams. So it becomes even more impressive than that. Those are three guys that I completely trust in playoff baseball. So, you know, Reagans is your ace. You want to go with him first. Lugo, we've seen what he's been able to do all year. I mean, the guy has more pitches than what 53rd Street has as menu options. So this is what I expected, but it's happy to see that that's what they're going to do.
The 2014 team that made the postseason, Quentin. Leading RBI guy was 74, Alex Gordon. Perez had 70. Number 3 was Omar Infante was 66, tied with Eric Hosmer, 66. This year, as far as ribs are concerned, how about leading the way, Bobby Witt Jr., 109. Sal Perez, 104. Vinny had 97. Clearly, he would have been over 100 had he not hurt himself. That would have been three guys over 100 ribs. Again, 74. Led the way the 2014 Royals as far as power numbers are concerned. The leading home run hitter was Alex Gordon with 19, Sal Perez 17, Mike Moustakas 15. This year, Bobby Witt Jr. 32, Sal Perez 27, and Vinny 19, MJ Melendez 17. So it's better power numbers as well with that for the Kansas City Royals. They have three guys over 30 stolen bases. Mikel Garcia, 37. Bobby Witt Jr., De'Ron Blanco, all had over 30 stolen bases. And as far as the 2014, just two guys over 30 stolen bases in Gerard Dyson and Alcides Escobar.
That's why I say that this is a better team.
It is. It is. Bullpen, no. But as far as the team's concerned, yes. Big T, Shawnee, you tried to call in. Take your call about 10:15 or so. I got Josh Briscoe from SINow.com. And, of course, 96.5 The Fan, Chiefs Insider, coming up next.